How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. It is 10-10-10 today, the date the TNA says only comes once a century, which is in fact true, although 10-9-10 also only comes once a century, and 10-8-10, and we could go on and on. But today, it is Bound for Glory, their version of WrestleMania. They've been building around this date, done a fairly good job as far as getting the word out that there is a pay-per-view today. Main event of the show, of course, a three-way Kurt Angle, Mr. Anderson, and yes, Jeff Hardy in a three-way, and a bunch of other matches underneath. We're going to preview that show here on the program, talk about all of the matches and what the big angle might be. They've got, supposedly, a huge angle here tonight. And of course, we've been hearing things like that for a long time now. In fact, there was supposed to be a big surprise or a big story or a big change on this past Thursday's Live Impact. And if we got it, I'm not quite sure what it is. So we're going to talk about that, plus all of the other news, including Flair and Foley at the Impact show this past Thursday night, the rating that that match did. Talk about an interview we did with Mick Foley a couple of days ago, what he had to say about his health and the pay-per-view tonight. Last night, Strikeforce in San Jose. We'll recap all of the big matches on that show, give you some backstage notes on the event. A near fight occurred backstage. We'll tell you about that. Also talk about the future of Kevin Nash, the Raw rating from this past Monday night, which was up quite a bit from the weeks prior, what probably caused it, and what we can look forward to in the future coming off the Hell in the Cell pay-per-view, which was this past Sunday night. Give you a quick recap of that show as well. We'll talk about Batista. Is his future in MMA or pro wrestling? Is he heading back to WWE? He talked about it last night, so we'll give you the absolute latest on that. The WWE Tour of Mexico. We'll talk about Raw, NXT, and SmackDown. And yes, I did watch NXT. Plus, the Mickie James debut, Hulk Hogan, an update on Jim Ross, Hulk Hogan, and a lot more. We got so much stuff coming up today. We're going to take your phone calls and emails as well. And of course, that's coming up in just a moment following our top of the hour break. So we'll be back in just a moment to kick it off. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Want to send a big shout-out to Extra Sports 860 AM in San Francisco, our newest affiliate, 50,000-watt station. So a lot of people listening today, so hopefully we can provide quality entertainment for you here on this Sunday afternoon, leading into the Bound for Glory pay-per-view, which is coming up just after this show goes off the air, 5 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. It is TNA's biggest show of the year, and as noted, the main event is Kurt Angle and Jeff Hardy and Mr. Anderson in a three-way for the TNA title. And Mike, what are your thoughts on the show? Have they done a good job promoting it this year?
No. I mean, obviously, the three-way for the title, they've done a good job in promoting and Van Damme of this to a point. But realistically, it's too bad for them that this past Thursday on the live Impact they did on Spike, which did do a better rating than it usually does, but they didn't really drive home the matches. I mean, they had a little thing with Jay Lethal because they went back to they used the film crew and they had 3D in New York, and they had Rhino and Tommy Dreamer in Philadelphia, and they go to Elizabeth, New Jersey, and they have Jay Lethal kind of talking about, you know, where he grew up and everything, and you can watch the rest of this on the post show next week. But they never mentioned that he's got an X Division Championship match against Doug Williams. I think they may have mentioned it in the Battle Royal, but they never really drove that home. They didn't drive home the Lethal Lockdown, which you would, you know, obviously the one of the bigger things on the card. They didn't do a good job about really drilling that home. They did almost a better job with Eric Young and Orlando Jordan against Inc., having their rematch on the show. So I think they've kind of screwed up there. It's obviously an interesting show. The Guns Generation Me should be good. The women's match will be what it is. But again, I mean, for it to be their WrestleMania, I'm not super amped up for it, although they say they're going to change the world today. I guess we'll see what happens.
I agree on the show. actually thought that, Impact was a better show than usual per Impact standards, but as far as a go-home show, and this is a problem that's been affecting both companies, it really wasn't much of a show. I mean, when you look at the lineup of the event, you look at the main event, yes, it is a three-way for the title, but there is a stipulation there with Kurt Angle, where if he does not win the title tonight, he has to retire. And, of course, the argument is that, well, no one believes that stuff anyway, so it really doesn't need to be hammered home. Well, if that's the case, then why is the stipulation even there? You know,
but
to me,
like Flair. That was like Flair leading up to WrestleMania, where if you lose one match, you're going to be retired. They've said it with Angle now, and they say, well, you know, he says it in his video packages, and obviously he's being sincere about it, trying to sell the stipulation, but when the announcers talk about it, when it's presented by TNA, it's almost an afterthought. So that's, you know, exactly. Why have it? And that's why I can see it maybe playing, into the plans tonight. But the problem is they haven't driven it home. So if it does happen, I don't think people are really going to get it.
My concern on Impact was the main event was a Royal Rumble-style match with the winner getting supposedly $100,000. And it ended up with Angle and Mr. Anderson in the ring. And then Angle just eliminated him. And I was kind of shocked by that because it's like the stipulation, I mean, it should be something that his career is on the line. So, you know, leading into that match with his career on the line, shouldn't he maybe have lost the Battle Royals? So you sit there going, man, it's going to be an uphill battle for Kurt. I'm going to have to tune in to find out what happens if he can pull this thing off. And then, I mean, if the storyline was that had he lost in the Battle Royal, he would have had to retire as well. Then the question is, why didn't they make a big deal out of that? That should have been the focal point of the entire Battle Royal, that if Kurt Angle doesn't beat these 25 other men, he needs to retire. And I'm not sure that was brought up at all during the match. So a rather poor job of hyping up the pay-per-view. And furthermore, for the people in the UK, and granted, the people in the UK don't pay for the pay-per-views, they get them for free, but they saw the Impact show as well, and in the U.S., the Battle Royal went off the air after Impact ended, so we all got to see the end of it on Reaction, but there is no Reaction in the U.K., so for the folks overseas that saw Impact, the Battle Royal ended with no winner, and then that was the end of Impact for the evening. So they never got to find out who won unless they went online. And little things like that that are not going to, it's not goodwill with your fan base to go off the air without a resolution when everyone knows in the U.S. you're going to get that resolution, but in U.K. you do not. So that was interesting, but that's the main event of the show. And underneath, Rob Van Dam and Abyss in a Monsters Ball match, which is a hardcore match, with the storyline being that Abyss, this will be his final match. Whether he wins or loses, he is going to be terminated at the end of the evening for basically a hostage situation with Dixie Carter on Thursday. And what are your thoughts about this match here, Mike?
This is kind of goofy, too. I mean, I can't remember if you talked about it with Dutch Mantel this week or if you talked about it with Dave where, and we've been talking about it anyway, with the cover story you did a couple weeks ago on pay-per-views, it's you're buying pay-per-views for the twist now instead of the culmination, and it's like Angle. You could have had, you know, played up all these aspects going into the three-way and intertwine all of these things so you get a payoff at the end of this thing, you know, at what's supposed to be the WrestleMania show, and here's another one. Why it was necessary to, you know, have Dixie dragged out with the handcuffs, with Abyss with both weapons, and God knows no one can stop him until Eric Bischoff runs out with black shirt security. I mean, I'm not looking forward to this just because I don't have that much care into it. And again, it's basically you're waiting to see what's going to happen after this. So you know this is getting fired. So you know something's going to happen here. Okay. I could see that being a reason for people to tune in. I could also see, just people skipping it and just seeing what happens come next Thursday.
The big storyline on the show tonight is supposedly that Abyss's crew, he just calls them they. They are showing up, supposedly, at this show. Or at least
I like how it's they, yet the weapons have names.
Well, that's true. He's got Janice, the board with nails sticking out of it, and Bob, which I believe is a branding iron. And
Barry, whatever it is.
Yeah, of course, Bob is Dixie Carter's father's name, and I believe Janice is her mother, so that's the inside storyline there. Ha ha! Anyway, they did an angle on Impact where of course, they want, Dixie wants Abyss fired because he took her hostage. So Eric Bischoff comes in and he's got a clipboard with papers and he tells her that these are the termination papers effective at midnight Sunday night to get rid of Abyss once and for all after his match with RVD. And she hurriedly signs them, not reading them over or anything like that. So, of course, the speculation is that in doing so, she signed over the rights to the company to Eric Bischoff. Now, if that ends up being the big storyline, and the storyline originally was that this was going to be the night where Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff turned heel. If that's the storyline, I don't know. I mean, in some ways, it's kind of creative that that's how they end up getting control of the company. In another way, I mean, legally, they would not have a foot to stand on. I mean, this was on film. She was obviously fooled. She had no intention of signing over the company. I mean, we actually had, I had a lawyer email me and say, "You're right, Brian, this would never hold up in court." But presumably it's going to hold up in the court of TNA. But if that's the case, I mean, it's still interesting in the sense that you probably don't have Hulk Hogan there. Yeah, you have Eric. I guess Eric would then rehire Abyss on Impact or something like that, since, of course, we're going to have to wait till Impact to find out what happened. But I don't know if this is really the kind of storyline that's about to turn this place around. And, Mike, your quick thoughts.
No, the same way. And, again, I've never been the biggest, hugest Abyss fan in the world either. But, the, you know, how he's been portrayed in the up and down with him, it's just, it's hard for me to get into this storyline and think it's going to be anything. Although, again, if they can prove they can do something, great. But I've been watching him all year to prove something to me, and for the most part, they haven't.
So that is the potential big surprise. And, of course, the update on Hulk Hogan is we don't really have an update, except that he's been in and out of the hospital quite a bit. He's had surgery on his back. He's had some things inserted into his back to try to solve his back issues. And it's strange. I guess we'll talk about this. We're running up against a break. We'll talk about Hulk Hogan and whether or not he's going to show up today and what they've been doing with him on TV after we come back from the break. It actually is a rather fascinating story. So that's coming up here in just a moment. And we'll preview the rest of the Bound for Glory card. A lot of stuff going on. So we'll be back in just a moment. Don't touch that dial. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We'll be taking your phone calls and emails as well. And right now, we are talking about the Bound for Glory pay-per-view, which actually leads me to an email. I want to kick off with this. He says, "I know that Hulk Hogan surgery was legit. Is it possible that Hulk will still appear tonight? Could he still hobble down or hit someone with a crutch during the match?" That is from Mike. Well, it's funny you should mention that, because I'm not sure what the storyline or what the angle is going to be tonight. But one of the big matches this evening is a handicap match now that Hulk Hogan is out. They claimed it was originally scheduled to be Hulk Hogan, Sting, and Kevin Nash against D'Angelo, De Niro, and Samoa Joe, and Jeff Jarrett. And by the way, if you go to Wikipedia, they've messed that matchup, but maybe something's changed. I don't even know. They have it as Sting, Nash, and D'Angelo against Joe and Jarrett. Actually, that is the match. I'm sorry. I screwed it up. Anyway, it's a 2-on-3 match. The point of the match is that originally Hulk Hogan was supposed to be the third man on the Joe and Jarrett team. Now he's out of action. He had to have an electronic, I forget what they call it. It's a deal that you insert into your spine that sends electrical pulses to it to ease your pain and help you move. Anyway, he had that inserted. It really was inserted into his back. There are pictures online of him being all stitched up and that sort of thing. And they're playing it up like there's no way he could possibly be at the show today. Now, I put nothing past these people. Yes, I know that Hulk Hogan really had surgery. Yes, I know that Hulk Hogan has been in the hospital. I don't know if he has been in the hospital like in the last couple of days. You know, this very easily could have been a deal where he was in the hospital 3 weeks ago. They did all of his surgeries. TNA filmed all of it. And they waited until the week before Bound for Glory to put it on TV to act like it had just happened. And at that point, Hogan would, in fact, be able to hobble down to the ring tonight. And my thought My original prediction is that this is rather similar, in fact, to the Bash at the Beach 1996, where the NWO had a mystery man. Actually, it was Team WCW was supposed to have the mystery guy, and Hulk Hogan came out to make the save. And it was NWO. I'm sorry. Anyway, regardless, Hogan came out, and everybody thought that he was going to help beat up the NWO because he was the biggest babyface supposedly in the company. But instead, he turned on WCW. He joined the NWO, and that was that. We are set up here in a 3-on-2 situation. The advantage is with the heels, Sting, Nash, and De Niro, and so they could do the deal where Hulk Hogan, despite all of his injuries and his surgeries, he hobbles down to ringside to support Samoa Joe and Jeff Jarrett, and then, yes, he, in fact, hits the babyfaces with a crutch and turns heel. It is possible it happens. I don't know if it is. If it's going to happen, they will keep it as big a surprise as humanly possible. Mike, what are your thoughts on the chances of this happening?
Yeah, there's a chance of it happening. I hope for just the aesthetic point of view, it doesn't, because it's going to take forever for him to get down there and go ahead and do all of that. I hope they have some sort of backup plan, but yeah, I mean, that's what it screamed like the most, too, when it was like, okay, Hogan, Jarrett, there we go, and with Nash acting as though he's incredibly upset and all of that stuff that went into that. It wouldn't surprise me, but, you know, and I guess they tried to do a good job of, they had the Pope this week kind of hint at Jericho and, you know, kind of throw that out there as, you know, some distractions for people. But, you know, they've tried. It's just, again, I don't know, as much as they have hyped this up and as much as they've kind of, you know, push this, I don't know if it's really dragged people in the way they thought it would. And I don't know, even if it's Hogan, no matter what it is it going to be enough to really shock people into tuning in every week?
What do you think of the idea of Hogan as a heel in 2010 anyway?
It's, you know, it's like Flair, to be honest, and even worse than the fact that TNA in such a small, it's not like they couldn't pull it off with people booing him, but realistically, I think from a PR standpoint, with everything that's happened in his life and everything else, it's just better if he is a good guy. I mean, Flair obviously is the same way, but there's no way you can convince him of it, so it's fine. He can be the entertaining heel that he is. But when it comes to Hogan, I just think with everything he's got going on, and he just settled the lawsuit with General Mills or whoever it was over the cereal commercial, you know, he should be portraying a good guy character as much as humanly possible, I would assume.
You know, the other thing is, in some ways, it's a very different situation, but in some ways, it's kind of similar. If you remember back in WCW when Buff Bagwell broke his neck, and he really broke his neck, and he was in the hospital, he had surgery, they thought he would never walk again, much less wrestle, and, you know, he rehabbed, and he fought, and he scratched, and he clawed, and he made his way back to WCW, and, you know, to this day, he talks about, boy, did they ever drop the ball with me, because he felt he could have been a gigantic babyface coming back from such odds, a broken neck, the whole nine yards, and instead he came back and they immediately made him a heel. And it's kind of different in the case of Hulk Hogan because, I mean, you can't have Hulk Hogan as your top singles babyface on the show because he can't work, but it's kind of the same situation in that they're portraying him as such a sympathetic character. He's been in the hospital, I don't know what they've said, 8 times since January. He's having these things inserted into his back. He just keeps fighting to come back. He's such a valiant fighter. And they're going to bring him back and turn him heel? Hulk Hogan? It just seems like a terrible idea. But I guess we'll see what happens. I mean, he may not even be back tonight. I mean, this could all be legitimate. He may still be in intensive care, as they're claiming right now. So I guess we'll find out tonight. But that is... And that also leads us, actually, since we're talking about that match, to Kevin Nash. What is the future of Kevin Nash? He posted a bunch of deals on Twitter, which he's done a lot of late, where he's been very melodramatic. He's whined, oh, they don't feel I'm worth what I'm worth. I'm done. I'm not going to WWE. You know, if they don't want me, that's great. I'll go back to being a husband and a father. Just, I don't know. It comes off very poorly, but his contract is up in 2 days, so presumably he's going to be at the show today. TNA seems to feel that he's just trying to bargain, which is quite a bargaining tool when you admit you're not going to be negotiating with the other company. But, you know, there are people that think that he's going to get himself a new contract out of this, which I wouldn't give him, but that's just me. So what do you think about this whole Kevin Nash deal?
Well, you know, history with Kevin Nash would indicate that he may actually be right in all this, but I don't know. This whole the Twitter, Facebook, all this stuff, he and Matt Hardy and everybody else can have their little, you know, Lonely Hearts Club band of posting on there and doing this sort of stuff. I just kind of think it's supposed to be playing into everything else. I'm sure there's some, you know, there is a level of legitimacy to it, but again, I don't know why would he be so fed up that he wants to go. I can sort of understand it, but from a guy who can just, you know, kick it, take the check, not have to go too far away from home and everything, I don't see why it's such a bad gig for him, whether they use him or they don't use him, as long as he's getting paid. From at least from his own personal point of view, that would kind of surprise me. But, you know, as far as, you know, them offering him a new deal or having this work as leverage, I can't believe that they would do that. But then again, history with Kevin Nash shows that he'll usually end up okay in these things.
Email question here very quickly about TNA. Does TNA do live streaming of their pay-per-view? I went to their site. There was no indication if so or how much a TNA pay-per-view was. To my understanding, they are going to start live streaming, I think, with this show, but they're only streaming it to countries that cannot get TNA on pay-per-view. In other words, if you live in the United States and you can get the show on pay-per-view, then you will not be able to stream it from the website. If you live in any other countries, I think Australia, you can order it on pay-per-view, so you wouldn't be able to get it there. I'm not positive. You'll have to go up there and check. But I believe it's starting today. So if you live in an area that cannot get TNA on pay-per-view, an area of the world, you will be able to stream it for $9.99. So check out the website. But as far as I know, they don't do live streaming of the pay-per-views here in the U.S. And if they do, they've done a very poor job of promoting it. And he also had a quick question about my career. Did you ever have a tryout with WWE, WCW, NWA, or wrestled for either company at one point? Or did you only wrestle on the side? Your heart was always with the newsletter. Yes, I always wanted to do the newsletter. I had no desire to go to WWE, WCW, or anywhere like that. I always knew that the newsletter was my bread and butter. And here in 2010, I can tell you I made the right decision. So there you go. We're going to, we've got some time. Let's talk more about this pay-per-view here. We've got a Lethal Lockdown match, which is similar to War Games. It's AJ Styles, Kazarian, Matt Morgan, Robert Roode, and James Storm, the Team of Fortune, against EV 2.0, Tommy Dreamer, Raven, Rhino, Sabu, and Stevie Richards. Another match that they did a terrible job hyping up on TV this past Thursday because, I mean, really, going into today, would you have had any idea who was on either team, particularly the EV 2.0 team?
No, and that's the biggest problem. And they had, you know, after the Flair Foley match this past Thursday, yes, they had, you know, Fortune going in and attack Foley, and EV2 come out to clear the ring, but they never really drove home, you know, beat it into the ground that, you know, this is, I mean, I would put this above RVD and Abyss as far as the second biggest match on the show and the biggest thing you want to push. It's, you know, War Games, Lethal Lockdown. It should be a big deal, and I don't think they drove it home enough, and I also don't think they really drove it home into their fans' heads that, you know, EV 2.0 would even have a shot here. Yes, they, you know, they had a lot of them talking and doing the video clips and testimonials and things like that over how it's going to be and what they built and all this stuff, but I don't know to the average TNA fan how many of them really think Fortune's in danger here.
Not to mention, what is on the line? I have no idea. No one seems to know.
Pride.
Pride, I guess. Pride is on the line. Yeah, this has not been built up to the best of their abilities, but hopefully it'll be a decent
match. Last year's Bragging Rights Trophy.
It could be. The Dragging Rights Trophy from 2009. Maybe on the line here. We're going to talk about bragging rights a little bit later on in the show. And we're also going to preview the rest of this show after we come back from the break. And then we have a ton of news to talk about, including last night's Strikeforce show. And we'll also talk about the Mick Foley-Ric Flair match from Impact this past Thursday night. It was actually a pretty tremendous match until the finish, which I still don't quite understand, and Mick Foley really didn't either. So we'll talk about that and a lot more when we come back from our hourly break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And for the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, always head to WrestlingObserver.com. That's our website. All the latest news in pro wrestling. We have daily news updates. As soon as this show goes off the air, we'll have live ongoing play-by-play of the TNA Bound for Glory pay-per-view by Dave Meltzer on the front page of the website. All of the match results as they happen. We've also got a special edition of Wrestling Observer Radio after the program tonight with Dave and I. It's exclusive for members of the website. If you sign up for the site, you get a lot of bonus content in addition to all the free stuff that you get, such as the TV reviews, daily news updates, and pay-per-view recaps. As a subscriber, you get full access to our radio archives as well. We do 15 to 20 brand new radio shows every single week. In fact, I've done probably close to 15 radio shows in the last 7 days just on my own, including a show last night with Dave Meltzer talking the Strikeforce show. We had a 90-minute interview with Mick Foley on Friday talking all of the news in his career, Bound for Glory, the match with Flair, and a lot more. As a subscriber, it's $10.99 a month. That's it. No other costs. $10.99 a month, you get full access to all of these new shows. Every new show that we do, virtually every single day of the week, sometimes several shows per day. But you also get full access to our archive, which dates back to 2005. Every show we have ever done is available in the archive. So if you signed up right now and you wanted some wrestling audio, you literally would not be able to go through all of the audio in your 1 month subscription time or even in a full year. I would think that most people probably in their entire lives would never be able to go through all of this audio. We have thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of audio. Interviews with some of the biggest names in the sport, including Ric Flair, Bret Hart, Mick Foley, as noted. List goes on and on. Check it out at WrestlingObserver.com, the free section and the members section. If you want more, you will not be disappointed. Plus, you get full access to the Wrestling Observer newsletter and Figure Four Weekly. Observer has been published since 1983, comes out every week. 35,000 words of news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every single week. We also put out back issues and Figure Four Weekly as well, published since 1995. So head over there, check it out. We've got free radio shows. If you want to scroll down the right-hand side of the screen at WrestlingObserver.com, there's a list of our latest three free shows. Check them out. Absolutely free. It's just an MP3 download. Put it on your MP3 player. And if you like what you hear, consider signing up. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. We were talking about the Bound for Glory pay-per-view here and the main events on the show. Let's get into the final matches here before we move on. Angelina Love, Velvet Sky, Madison Rain, and Tara for the Knockouts title. Special guest referee Mickey James, who debuted on Thursday night. Mike, your thoughts on that one?
On the match itself, I'm assuming we're going to see Tara and Mickey James first. I don't know. I think there's going to be some sort of swerve here somewhere. I just don't know exactly what it is. I'll just say Angelina Love holding on to the title. I just wonder if we're going to get more Miss Tessmacher interaction week after week.
Presumably we will. I don't know what it'll be, but we have the Motor City Machine Guns against Generation Me for the tag team titles. I would be stunned if they took the belts off the guns already, but you never know what'll happen. Should just be an all-action good match and probably an easy thumbs up here on this show.
Yeah, and I'm not sure exactly what the status is of Douglas Williams and Brutus Magnus, Nigel McGuinness and Brutus Magnus, and I remember that's where it looked like that was going, and then they ended up having Generation Me in there for a little bit longer. So I'm guessing the guns go over, and then we'll see what happens to the Brits after that.
Eric Young and Orlando Jordan against Jesse Neal and Shannon Moore in a tag team match. This battle.
Why?
They set this up on Thursday by having a horrible match with a clean finish, and then they figured, hey, let's just do it again. So this does not need to be on the show.
Yeah, I said 2 weeks ago they just joined up as a team on the international show Explosion. If you're going to, of all the guys that they have, if they were going to have something fill time, why this? I really don't understand why this.
And finally, Douglas Williams and Jay Lethal for the X title should probably be a strong match. Lethal is the champion, for those of you that don't remember, which, if you do remember, I'm actually shocked. And hopefully this will just be a good time in the ring.
Yes, I did not remember that, but hopefully they get more time than they're actually going to get and should be the show stealer, at least I would hope.
Impact this past Thursday did a 1.3 rating, one of the bigger ratings of the year, highlighted by the Ric Flair-Mick Foley match. It was a false count anywhere bout, peaked at a 1.44 rating. Very strong number for TNA. They had a spectacle of a match. There was blood, thumbtacks, barbed wire, violence, and I thought it was, for all things considered, a heck of a match. And then, unfortunately, they had a nonsensical finish, which was both men down. They struggled to make it to their feet. Flair got to his feet, which should have broken the count, but he immediately did a Flair flop, and so the ref just kept counting. So Ric Flair lost. I thought it was a great match. Mike, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, again, yeah, it was nonsensical. And it, well, kind of was, it was bookended with some head scratchers, as they kept saying before, including the pre-match announcement, that it was a false count anywhere match. They forgot to say it was actually a last man standing match, or they got it confused. And yeah, obviously the head scratching ending. But yeah, Foley and Flair, which it was amazing hearing Foley talk about having discussions of concussions on the show that you did with him. And he takes a bump off the stage before the commercial break, where he's still going to be Mick Foley, and goes off of it, and you know, seemed to go a little bit long, and went shoulder first into the concrete, which just, yeah, it's always tough to see him do. But it was a good match. Obviously, Foley was going to make Flair try to stick with the, if you win, I'm going to kiss your ass, and that's what caused the Fortune's involvement at the end there. But you know, it was Foley and Flair, and it was two guys, you know, bleeding. It was, you know, two guys who were still good, and that's why, you know, it got a 1.44 and peaked out at that. It's amazing the guys have been around for this long. I mean, when was that WrestleMania when it was Batista and Foley and Flair and Rock and all that? I mean, how long ago was that? And it's still Flair and Foley was the best thing on this show.
I'm reading Foley's book right now, and if you're not a TNA fan and you don't really care about Foley's private life, then you're really not going to like the book. But if you followed his TNA career and you're interested in Foley's private life, you're probably going to love the book, because he's a really, really good writer. I guess that's not a surprise if you've read any of his other books, but it's a very interesting read. And he talks in the book about injuries and how he once went to the doctor and they examined his pelvis, which has broken bones in it that have all healed themselves up. But the broken bones are not on the outside, like on the outside of his hips where he took all of those flying elbows. The broken bones are on the inside of his hip. And he said that when he heard that information, he was kind of surprised. He didn't even know there were bones in there that could be broken. And he was essentially told by his doctor that, you know, this is bad news and could lead to paralysis. So you read something like that, and then you watch him flying off this stage and crashing through this table and overshooting it, landing on the cement. And it's just like, you really don't need to be doing this at this point in your life. But he's Mick Foley, and he does. And he pulled out all the stops for this match, and it was extremely memorable. And whether or not he has very many more matches in his career, at least he can say that he had this one here in 2010 with Ric Flair, which was extremely memorable here on Impact. And he did note that he was happy it was on Impact and not a pay-per-view, because it just ensured a much, much larger audience, which is in fact true. Probably close to 2 million people saw that particular match right there. So, full interview was fun. Talked about a lot of different situations, including concussions, as you noted, and his thoughts on the Linda McMahon campaign. So that's up right now at WrestlingObserver.com if you want to check it out. And we are going to move on to more news here. Strikeforce last night from San Jose, headlined by Nick Diaz versus KJ Nunes Part 2. A battle which, I don't know. I'm not even really like a boxing fan. I don't watch a lot of boxing, but they had the sloppiest boxing match I've ever seen, and some people loved it, and some people hated it. I leaned more towards the side of hating it. I was begging for that fight to be over, because they were both just frustrating me like crazy with their wild swings, many of which didn't seem to have any power behind them, sticking their faces out, putting their hands down. I mean, it was, you know, it makes for an exciting fight, but, you know, these are human beings that are going to have rough lives down the road performing like this. And, Mike, what were your thoughts on that particular battle?
say as a boxing fan, don't put this one too much on boxing, even though KJ Nunes has been announced as what the, how was he announced, the first crossover success of MMA as far as in his kickboxing experiences and his boxing experience, and then the whole nine yards there, which was kind of made me laugh. But, I mean, it was just, yeah, and for Nunes supposedly being such a great boxer, Diaz is just, obviously, it's well noted that he can just drive you absolutely nuts. He is throwing punches that are obviously doing damage when you look at the other guy's face and the fact that, you know, towards the end of fights he can rock them, but they're such pitter-patter, ugly-looking punches. And in Nunes was driving me nuts because it was absolutely ridiculous. Every time Nunes got hit by Diaz, every single time, wherever that punch landed, if it was on the left side of his face, Nunes would go to that side and move his hair out of the way. Which I thought was like a nervous thing in like the first round, but no, he did that the entire fight. And Nunes, for supposedly being so much of the better boxer, besides the second round, Diaz pretty much swept the rest of the fight. And they didn't do themselves I don't think they did themselves any favor and a good enough job of not. They just did not play up the fact that they got into it at Elite XC with the Diaz brothers flipping off the Nunes family in the cage. In Hawaii a while ago. And obviously Diaz and Nunes weren't playing into it too much throughout the week. In fact, Diaz was almost ridiculously sedated, as people saw the show last night when he was interviewed in the back. And granted, he can be a tough interview as it is, but it was the promotion stuff to really kind of hype up the venom and some of the other things going into the fight, because I think if they would have done that, and Diaz winning as convincingly as he did, it would have made it at least a little bit easier to try to have a marketable third fight, which at this point, after that performance, I don't think anybody, even though it's tied up 1-1, I don't think anybody really wants to see it.
Well, Scott Coker, who's in charge of Strikeforce, doesn't really want to see it right now. He was not high on the idea, and I guess we'll see where it goes. But they gave the decision to Diaz. I mean, I essentially ruled it a draw. Is like a loss for both men. I mean, some people saw it as decisive for Diaz. I didn't. Yeah, he landed a lot of shots. So did Nunes. I mean, the whatever they call it, the boxing meter, the CompuStrike scoring, you know, it had Nunes landing more shots, which, whether that's true or not, I'm not sure, but it claimed he landed more, and to me, he landed the harder shot. So, you know, if you're judging it on from that perspective, then maybe Nunes should have won the fight. But yes, hair too long. Scott Coker flat out said, you know, before I even talk about a rematch, we need to get KJ a haircut. And Nunes himself said that he was an idiot, that he had decided to grow his hair long. He said it never bothered me in practice, which begs the question, were you training? Maybe, I guess he was just training with headgear on, which maybe you should have taken that into consideration, that the headgear was not going to hold your hair back in a fight. So, you know, Clay Guida pulls his hair out of his eyes here and there, but not constantly as this man did here. And just a lesson, everybody, don't have long hair when you fight. So that was the main event there of the show.
Yeah, but Clay Guida pulls it out of his eyes like he's a big caveman maniac, where it looked like Nunes was doing it just because, like, you know, flicking it out because it was just kind of bothering him a little bit.
Yeah, so it was just, this did not work. So also on the show last night, we had a title change as Marla's Kunin beat Sarah Kaufman for the 135-pound title with an armbar from the bottom, which was a pretty good fight. And also Josh Thompson beat Jay-Z Cavalcante via decision in a match that I thought the right man won. Other people felt that Jay-Z won. And Mike, very quickly, who did you have in that fight?
I thought Thompson won. I gave him the first two rounds. Now, Cavalcante obviously won the third round, but I thought Thompson won the first two.
I agree.
I mean, that second round, I mean, I don't think Cavalcante did enough where I thought Thompson was pushing a little bit more. He's the one who had the trip takedown. He was able to avoid any heavy punishment. You know, tried the arm triangle again, you know, towards the end of the round. I just thought he won that round.
We'll talk a little bit more about that fight and the scoring when you come back from the break. It was interesting in that one of the judges saw the fight in such a manner that even the winner of the fight thought that this man needed to go to judging school. So we're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. We've also got a lot of other news, emails, and we'll start taking your phone calls. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here talking the Strikeforce show from last night, the Jay-Z Cavalcante match against Josh Thompson. I gave the first round to Thompson. I thought that he escaped a guillotine. He was in trouble, but he escaped. And then once he escaped, he laid quite a beating on Jay-Z from the guard and had him in a head and arm choke that, to me, if the fight had gone another 5 seconds, Cavalcante was tapping out. And when you're that close to a submission in the first round, that round is yours. So I gave the first round to Thompson. I gave the second round to Thompson. I gave the third round to Cavalcante. One of the judges somehow gave the third round to Josh Thompson. I have absolutely no idea what fight this person was watching. And afterwards, when asked about it, Thompson basically said that there's no way I won that third round. It's time we had some judging clinics. And he's 100% positive any judge that scored that third round as a win for Thompson realistically should probably not ever be judging again.
Yeah, but they will be probably multiple times, too. Maybe that judge was just excited over the fact that the only thing you would give Thompson on is that in that round is when he had him in the rubber guard and he was waving at the camera and kind of flexing a little bit, which was a really funny moment. But that's, I think, the only thing you can give him in the third round. And in the first round, yeah, I mean, yeah, Cavalcante had that guillotine choke on for about 45 seconds. But, you know, outside of that, I mean, he bullied Thompson against the cage early. But that whole rest of the round, to me, was clearly Thompson's, especially with that arm triangle choke at the end.
We got a lot of news to get into here today, including some thoughts on the Brock Lesnar-Cain Velasquez show, which is now airing on Spike TV over the next 3 weeks, hyping up their match, which is coming up in Anaheim at the end of the month. Also going to talk about all of the TV for this week, including NXT. I did, in fact, see that show. Talk about WWE business, the latest on Batista, the debut of Mickie James, a little bit more from Impact, plus an update on Jim Ross, and maybe we'll recap a little bit of the Hell in a Cell, too, although I think most people probably saw Raw this past Monday night and are aware that Kane, still the champion, now aligned with Paul Bearer, and Randy Orton, still the champion, retaining over Sheamus. So we'll talk about that and a lot more coming up after the hourly break. Talk to you in 7 minutes. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined as always by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare at WrestlingObserver.com. We spent the first hour talking about Strikeforce, the TNA Bound for Glory pay-per-view, and more. In this hour, your phone calls, emails, and more news. And I wanted to quickly address the Brock Lesnar, Cain Velasquez set of, I guess it's going to be a set. We've only seen one episode so far. On Spike TV, hyping up their match coming up in Anaheim later on this month. I thought the first episode was awesome. And Mike, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I thought the same thing. There's going to be, I guess, three of them total leading into the show. But I thought they did a really, really good job. And kind of, I know people thought it was a little bit over the top playing up the Velasquez's Mexican heritage. The thing is, it's important for them to do. UFC's been kind of stop-start and a little bit slow on that anyway, but in the last couple of years, they've really gone out with a vengeance, including taking away a lot of boxing pay-per-views that are airing on the same day, because the second pay-per-view channel for a lot of people is the Spanish-language broadcast for the UFC, so, you know, proven market, a market that's continuing to grow in the United States, and you do need faces, you know, as many as humanly possible. Plus, he's a great story anyway. I mean, we'll probably talk about it after the break, but, you know, obviously, you know, the only thing he's got going against him in a lot of ways is size, which is a very, very big deal. But I thought they did a really good job with it. Brock Lesnar's beard is incredibly mighty. And, you know, again, after the Ultimate Fighter, I mean, this did a better number than the Ultimate Fighter show did coming on after it. I mean, it's just, no matter when you put this stuff on, it was 11 o'clock at night, people are going to catch it and go out of their way for it. And we're talking about a million pay-per-view buys probably for this fight.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about this when we come back from the break. I was a huge fan of Brock Lesnar on this show. I thought they did a very good job with Kane, but I thought that Brock was just phenomenal in a lot of different ways. And yes, an easy 1 million buys for this show. I don't even know how in the next 2 weeks they could screw this up and make you not want to buy the show unless the storyline is that Brock gets hurt and can't fight. But we're going to talk about this more when we come back from the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Want to send out a big shout-out, Extra Sports 860 AM in San Francisco, 50,000-watt station, joining the fray here with Wrestling Observer Live every single week. Hope you guys are enjoying the show. We're talking about UFC, the Brock Lesnar-Cain Velasquez fight, which is coming up. They're airing specials on Spike TV every Wednesday night after Ultimate Fighter, hyping up this show. And the first one was awesome. I thought that Brock Lesnar came off as a giant mountain man. He had his beard. Obviously, everyone knows he's a legit fighter. He's a UFC heavyweight champion. I thought they did a good job as far as making Kane look like a guy who had the capacity to beat Brock Lesnar. I think that's very important. But to me, Brock just came off as the kind of guy where I just see him as the guy where when he fights, fans just have got to buy the show. They've got to buy the show to see this guy getting in there and pounding on some dude's head or taking him down and just beating the crap out of him. It's the impression you get with this man. There's nobody like Brock Lesnar nowadays. There's nobody like him. He's a giant heavyweight monster, and he goes in there and destroys guys. And that, to me, is instant money. And all of his pay-per-views of late have done gigantic numbers. This one should be no exception. His fight with his last fight, actually, with Shane Carwin, did, I think, 1.16 million buys, somewhere around there. And that's domestic, by the way. So keep in mind that the SummerSlam pay-per-view did 206,000. So Brock Lesnar did five times the number of buys in the United States that SummerSlam did. And he's just the guy that you just have to see him when his fights come around. And I think easy 1 million buys. And if, here's a fact for everybody, if Brock Lesnar's fight with Cain Velasquez does more than 1.1 million buys, then if you add up all of WWE's domestic pay-per-view buys over the year, Brock Lesnar alone beats every single one of the WWE's domestic buy rates put together. That is an astounding stat.
It really is, and they haven't even really hyped up the fact, and they have a little bit, that Jake Shields is going to be on the card, but when you look at the rest of this card and the heat up that they're going to have leading into it in the next couple of weeks, I mean, you still have Diego Sanchez and Paulo Thiago and Tito Ortiz and Matt Hamill, plus Gabriel Gonzaga and Brendan Schaub, which is a, you know, kind of a clutch fight for Schaub. So you have faces that are still fresh. You know, Schaub coming off Ultimate Fighter, the last season. Ortiz, obviously, he's got his fan base, and Matt Hamill's got his. Diego's got his. I mean, yeah, how this thing is not going to do incredibly, incredibly well is, you know, and again, they haven't even really turned it up yet.
I think this has the potential to be the biggest pay-per-view of the entire year, maybe by a decent margin. You know, I don't know if it's going to be as big as UFC 100. I don't think it is. In fact, I would feel kind of foolish right now to say that. But if you do look at the lineup, and if you've got another 2 weeks of this, and if they really turn up the heat on that countdown show, I mean, this can do really well. So I guess we'll find out. I'm not going to make a prediction until the final week, except to say that I'm certain it's doing more than 1 million buys. So UFC, you know, we've talked about this before. They're getting to the point where Fight Night, Ultimate Fighter, even some of these low-level pay-per-views. I think that, in fact, the last show with Frank Mir and Mirko Krokop probably did under 300,000 buys. But, you know, that's the way things evolve. when you have so much product, the low-level shows start to really fall off, but the big shows are still the big shows, and this one is going to be a really, really big show. I'm heading to Vegas for this, so we'll have a live report, basically, on Sunday afternoon of all of the festivities and everything that went down, so it should be a really exciting time. The date, for those who want to mark it on their calendar, is the 23rd of October from Anaheim, California, and Mike, this weekend, there is another UFC event. It is the show with Akiyama and, I guess it's Akiyama and...
Michael Bisping.
Okay, I keep thinking Akiyama and Chris Lieben, because that fight was so damn great. But yes, Akiyama and what's his name? Help me out here, for God's sake.
Michael Bisping.
The Count and Akiyama is coming up this weekend, and sad state of affairs here on my end. But Mike, your thoughts on that show?
I think if I was British, I'd be loving it because it's obviously, you know, a British heavy card. I mean, I like Akiyama. I want Akiyama's success in UFC. With that said, 185 pounds facing Michael Bisping is not going to be the best of ideas because he should try to battle him to the ground. Much like he did with Lieben, he won't. He's going to take too many punches. The British crowd is going to be well-placed behind Bisping, and I just have a feeling it's going to go the same way. But more likely, I think Bisping knocks him out. A little bit earlier, and I just don't... Akiyama has got to fight at catch weights or try to figure out a way he can get himself down to 170, because I think he'd be far safer there. Dan Hardy, I'm kind of looking forward to again, just because... Again, maybe not be the best, most well-rounded person in the whole wide world, but realistically, he can put on some fun fights. So I hope he does against Carlos Condit. But outside of that, you know, thankfully for Americans, it's on Spike TV because they would have trouble selling this one.
Yeah, until you'd mentioned it, I'd completely forgotten that the show was this coming weekend. And it is a Spike TV show, which is good. It's going to be airing from the O2 Arena in London. Bisping and Akiyama is the main event. And also, as noted, Dan Hardy and Carlos Condit, John Hathaway and Mike Pyle.
Hathaway, too, so that ought to be good, especially coming off his win against Sanchez.
Chick Congo and Travis Brown and James Wilkes against Claude Patrick. So not a big show in terms of star power, but hopefully it's going to be a good show on Spike TV coming up this weekend. So anyway, it's what happens. You got a lot of shows in a short period of time, and sometimes it's easy for some of those shows to fall through the cracks as that one did with me right there. What have been your thoughts on The Ultimate Fighter this season?
Yeah, I've never been the biggest fan of this show, which just because of the debaggery level that always seems to have on it when you get a bunch of testosterone locked in a room and all they can do is drink. I mean, I know that Bruce Leroy is an entertaining guy, Alex Casarsis, and Sivak getting so upset with him this past episode where, you know, it's just, I don't know, that type of stuff drives me nuts. Now, it has been interesting, at least to me. They talked about psychology on this episode, and it was a really good one for them to do it with, because you can see the difference between George St. Pierre and Koscheck, how they're running their camps, where GSP and his success, it's almost like he's really going into war, and he gets, you know, that calm over anything can happen, and he's well thought out. And Koscheck's side, you're going in for a fight, and they kind of touched on the psychology between the fighters who fought this week, Kyle Watson for GSP's team and Andy Main for Koscheck's. And the guy who, you know, they said the guy who manages the anxiety best and the stress best coming out is the one who's going to win. And, you know, Koscheck, you know, his team has taken on his type of mentality of, you know, going out there and being ready for the fight, where GSP's team is out there for the long-term war and winning the actual war. And three fights in a row now for Koscheck, you know, on the losing side of it. So, you know, he is a good prankster, but a fail as a coach so far, and GSP's team and how the perception of the show is coming off is just so many levels above Koscheck.
Let's take a call. You're on Wrestling Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Tony from Virginia. How are you guys doing?
What's up, Tony?
Not too much. I was just wondering, going to talk a little bit about pro wrestling for you and Mike. What were kind of your earliest memories of pro wrestling? Like, what kind of got you hooked onto it?
That's an interesting question. I want to thank you very much for the call. My first memory, believe it or not, was I think it was an Ultimate Warrior Dino Bravo match. That's like the first one that I can remember. I may have seen things prior to that, but my grandmother had lived in Mexico. Actually, she'd been from Mexico. She was living in Idaho. She was not doing well. She had diabetes, and she moved into our house, and I didn't understand a word she said. She spoke Spanish, and she would always say, "Lucha." And my dad explained that that was pro wrestling, and he turned on pro wrestling for her, and I saw an Ultimate Warrior Dino Bravo match, and I was hooked. And we're going to talk more about that. We'll talk about Mike's earliest memories as well when we get back. What a hook, everybody. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We were talking about, of all things, earliest memories of professional wrestling. And, Mike, what are the first things you remember? Actually, you know what? Even before a match, I remember that when I was little, my sister had Hulk Hogan posters in her room, and I hated them. I wanted to tear them down and destroy them. I just have that vivid memory. But, Mike, your earliest memories of wrestling?
God, we had moved to the Washington area when I was five in kindergarten, and it just seemed like every kid in the neighborhood had wrestling stuff, and my father was, you know, it wasn't the biggest wrestling fan in the world, but was a pretty big wrestling fan growing up in New York and watching Bruno and being Italian and all that. So I just grew up at a time where we got Baltimore and Washington stations, and from the surrounding area, a bunch of UHF channels that had constantly had wrestling on. I mean, it was just a ridiculous amount of pro wrestling. So I remember moving, seeing Flair and Steamboat and Youngblood, you know, some of my earliest stuff, watching Mid-Atlantic, and, you know, I can still remember, you know, the over-the-top Vince McMahon announcer voice of when the Iron Sheik went by Sergeant Slaughter, or went by, I think it was Private Terry Daniels, was holding the flag, and he booted him right in the crotch and doubled him over, but you know what? He did not let Old Glory hit the ground. He was able to keep the belt up, or keep the flag up, and that whole Iron Sheik, Sergeant Slaughter feud, so... You know, it's just I had the ability to watch a lot of it, and that's pretty much in between playing sports outside. That was about the only thing I did.
Let's do some of the... actually, we've got another caller here on the line, so we'll take this call. You're on Observer Live. Who is this, and where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Whisker Biscuit from the board in the Bay Area.
What's happening?
Oh, not too much. I just had a quick question. Ever since, you know, I used to be like a big fan of Ring of Honor, like, you know, like several years, like a couple years back, and then I just kind of I pretty much stopped watching it. But I just had a question that do you think that if, you know, Kerry decided to just give up the company and decided to not go with it anymore, that do you think if the company shut down, do you think the WWE would actually make a play for their tape library, since they have footage of all their Punk and Daniel Bryan and all that?
I think that they are interested in any tape library that they can get for a decent price, especially if you look at the idea that they're looking to set up their own WWE network. I mean, with WWE Classics, they really only put up about 20 hours of new material every single month. And if you've got a WWE network, obviously that's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So, you know, unless they do a lot of repetition or fill it up with a lot of other non-WWE programming, and even if they do, they're still going to need more wrestling programming if they're going to try and sell this station to wrestling fans. You know, they're going to need as much footage as they can possibly get. So, yeah, I would think that any tape library that they can get their hands on that has anybody of note, they would be looking to pick up.
Okay, yeah, because I was kind of reminded of years back when, I think on like one of the first, like, Stone Cold Steve Austin said they had, like, his ECW footage and things like that. So I was always curious about what they would think of, like, you know, companies that are still kind of around, but, you know, aren't the big players yet.
Yeah, I think they'd be interested in that, and I want to thank you very much for the call. There are a lot of libraries still out there for them to secure, and I think they'd probably be pretty happy to get Ring of Honor. And Mike, what are your thoughts?
I think if I'm Ring of Honor, that would be there's one of two ways to look at it. Do I go to somebody like, I don't know, Jim Cornette or somebody like that and say, hey, I'm getting out of this. Do you want to buy this at, you know, maybe a little less money? But if I'm Ring of Honor, if I'm in that position, I would probably go first to WWE and go, well, here you go. because they can offer the most amount of money. And if I'm WWE, it's a no-brainer in that, yeah, all of these guys that they've plucked from Ring of Honor from over the years, I mean, you might as well have that stuff. Their DVDs already have the music edited out of them, you know, which is one of the biggest holdups with trying to put stuff from the old territorial days and from ECW on was, you know, editing out a lot of the music rights and all that sort of stuff, and that's already done for them in DVD form. So, yeah, I think it would actually make a whole lot of sense, especially if they get that network off the ground.
This person here says, my prediction for the most pushed angle on tonight's pay-per-view, who are they? They are Bob and Janice Carter, also named Weapons of Abyss. They will take control from Dixie, give it to Eric Bischoff. That would tie in two storylines, that being the Pope-Nash-Sting conspiracy theory angle with the Bischoff and the Abyss reveal. Well, I think you're mostly right, but I don't actually expect the real Bob and Janice Carter to end up on TV. I think they'll just probably do the deal where Dixie signed over the company on Thursday's show. Although, again, you know, that's really straining.
Well, why not? They got Dixie. I mean, did you ever think you'd see Dixie being dragged out in handcuffs by Abyss?
Well, I figured she'd be on the show at some point when one of the writers got scared about his position.
What? I don't know. And again, I mean, if that's the way they go, okay, there's an interesting twist to the story. Let's see how they follow it up. I got no faith in them to follow up anything and to get anybody hooked coming from this. And again, just too bad.
The Mexico tour of WWE has not been blowing them away this past week. I don't have all the numbers for all the shows, but I know that the first night was the lowest attended show since WWE has been running regularly in Mexico over the last 6 years. And kind of a scary stat. I know that the show they ran, I think in Anaheim a couple of days ago, also did a really horrible attendance. And not a good sign, because historically, when business is about to turn around, you usually see it at the house shows first. And for a while there, WWE house show business all over the world was doing pretty well. It was last year and the year before. And now it's really starting to tank. And why that is, I'm not sure. They've got some new guys on top, but it's just not connecting with fans these days. And Mike, what are you thinking as far as WWE house show business and just business in general? What is wrong, and what can be done to help turn things around?
Well, it's going to be a process, because it's, you know, getting enough good stuff out there on TV. You know, I think pay-per-views, you're not getting anybody to spend $50 every month on a pay-per-view. You know, how do you expect you to go out and spend what, three times that, possibly, to take like a family of four or something, with, like, you know, taking two little kids and then, like, you know, a friend of the little kids there, and buying merchandise and all of this stuff? And, you know, I wonder what they're gonna, if they're able to make it back. They've got more merchandise out for kids now that you could not believe. Now that I'm a parent, when you really sit and you look at some of this stuff, like, you know, Uno, the WWE version, you know, stuff like that. I mean, I don't know how much money they're making off the licensing and some of that stuff, but hopefully they can make some of it back up, because the TV product just isn't giving you a reason. We talked about with pay-per-view buys, but it's the same thing for house shows. What's the reason to go out and go?
Actually, I'm going
Raw. Why spend that money in a tough economy? What are you doing to drag me out of the house and saying you need to see these larger-than-life people?
Well, the thing is, especially around here, I mean, I'm going to Raw on Monday night. It's in Seattle, so I'm going to head out to that show. But, you know, I got a lot of friends that are actually going to go to the show, and it's because Raw only comes maybe once a year. I mean, I'm trying to think the last time they were here. It's been quite a while. So, you know, if you only come once a year, then yeah, it's even people that don't follow wrestling regularly, it's like their chance to go out, see all their wrestling friends again, see all the stars. It happens once a year. You know, when you're running Mexico, I mean, I mentioned this several months ago when I was talking to Dr. Lucha Steve Sims about this situation. You know, when you run Mexico like every 4 or 5 months, and you're pretty much bringing the exact same guys down every single time. I mean, I'm kind of surprised it didn't do better, because it was a bunch of Alberto Del Rio, Rey Mysterio matches that were... it was Rey Mysterio and Kane, and Alberto Del Rio got involved. I kind of thought that would do a little bit better. But again, it's like all those people, they are paying huge sums of monies to watch those shows based on the Mexican economy and how much ticket prices are. They're paying a lot of money to go out there. And, you know, when you've seen those guys three times already in 2010 and the same guys are coming again and you have to think, okay, this is a full week's pay to buy tickets for myself and my family to go see this show, then, yeah, it's something that can be skipped.
But I think, you know what, I think even though there's you've got people going, I think for every person that says that, you know, well, it's only coming once a year, they'll go, there's somebody else in the exact same opposite position who really wants to go, God, I'm going to miss it this year, they never come here, and have to say oh well to it because of the ticket prices and going out of their way and with everything else with the economy where that money could be better spent. I mean, you know, do you either buy the pay-per-view that month or go, you know, or for 2 or 3 months or go to the show if you have a family. I mean, it's, you know, you take one or the other.
Got an email here. What do you think of the chances of Mike Tyson ever being snapped up by TNA or WWE? He's followed the sport. He needs the cash. He even had a throwaway match on Raw. Do you think there would be interest on either side? Well, if there were interest from WWE, they'd have done something after that throwaway match on Raw. They didn't even build that a week in advance. He had an impromptu match, and he was fine, actually. He was actually kind of surprisingly good. But anyway, no, I don't know what Mike Tyson even means nowadays. I mean, yeah, he's a big name, but, I mean, is he a name that's going to make a measurable difference in your TV ratings after the first couple of weeks? Probably not. So, I don't know. I think that it would cost way more than it would be worth, at least to me, in 2010.
Yeah, I mean, do you trust Mike with his lines and all of that other stuff, too? I mean, I know he's got a little bit of a revival going on from appearing in The Hangover and being in the Vegas scene and things like that. But I don't know if I would trust Mike Tyson over a lot of other guys they could be developing and who I'd rather have on TV first.
Did you watch NXT this week?
I did. You know, I was able to find it online because I'm unfortunately not in a country that still gets the honor of sitting in their easy chair and watching this on the big screen.
I was hoping it was going to play on you. I guess it would be MUN2. It didn't, but apparently it's going to be airing in a couple of weeks. So I don't know what the schedule is for MUN2. But anyway, I watched the show and it was fine. I mean, I thought they actually did a really good job. The Vicky Guerrero-Caitlyn match, I thought Vicky, Caitlyn, and Dolph Ziggler were all perfect in their roles. Vicky Guerrero's offense in that match was, like, god-awful. But as a heel performer, she was absolutely out of this world. So I really thought they did a great job with that whole package there. And we're going to get Mike's thoughts on that when we come back from the break. Also going to take some more phone calls and emails and wrap up talking about the news. We still have some stuff to talk about, including an update on Jim Ross and some thoughts on the Hell in the Cell pay-per-view. And we'll talk a little bit about Batista as well. So that's all coming up after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here to take your phone calls and emails. Let's start with a call here before we go back talking about NXT. You're on Wrestling Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Patrick from Hickory.
Patrick, what's up?
Not so much. I got a question, guys. I know there's been a lot about judges and referees and mixed martial arts. I was wondering if you'd ever think there'd be a point where organizations would hire their own judges and refs, or if you think that'd be a good idea, being as they can pick the best ones and think the ones that they think are more qualified.
Well,
if you listen to Dana White, in theory, that would be a great idea because he would assign people who knew what the hell they were doing, and they'd be smart enough to go out there and get it done and not be biased. But the problem is, if you were to do that, what's the difference between that and, you know, how pro wrestling does things? You know, there's a reason. Even as incompetent as the commissions and all that sort of stuff is for the UFC to do that, it would lend them. It brings too many things into question. And frankly, from Dana White's point of view, if he keeps the same stance he does on drug testing and some other things, he wouldn't want that responsibility anyway. It should be up to the commission, the athletic commissions, and all that to regulate that. But more pressure needs to be put on them more industry of, you know, as much as humanly possible from all sports to try to get competent people there in charge.
You know, it's funny because, like, if there's a bad call in UFC, at least Dana White, as bad as the call is, can go, okay, not my fault, not my referee. These are idiot commission referees that have made or judging. You know, these are idiot commission judges. These are idiot commission referees. Not my fault. The problem is, and I don't think that UFC should hire their own referees because and judges, because it would be more trouble than it's worth. But it is interesting when you hang out and watch UFC with a crowd of people, and there's like 10, 12 people there or whatever, and you see a bad decision or you see a bad call or whatever. I mean, you'll have casual fans upset at UFC because they don't understand that it's the commissions that are hiring these judges and referees. You know, I've seen decisions where the wrong man won, and they've assumed that UFC just wanted the other guy to win, even though UFC had absolutely nothing to do with what the judges decided. That's kind of the impression that a lot of fans have because they don't understand it. So, you know, the point is UFC's in a rough place no matter what happens here.
And one more thing, are commissions like getting upset with judges at all? I mean, I know they try to stick up for them a lot, but like, you know, last night where that one judge gave Thompson 30-27, that was like really stupid that she gave him the final round. But like, are commissions, like, do they ever go out and say it should have been scored differently? Like, do they stick up for them?
I know from talking to, thanks very much for the call, by the way. I know from talking to people in commissions that the California State Athletic Commission, when Bill Douglas was in charge, for a while there, if there was a judge that gave an outrageously stupid score, they would not assign that guy to judge any more events. Now, if you look at the people who are judging in Nevada, for example, obviously that's not the case. If you look at referees, obviously that's not the case. So I think for the most part, the commissions are fine with the judging and the refereeing. And I don't know what you can do about that.
No, that's the problem. There are these guys' mercy, and, you know, it's going to happen regardless of every effort that's put into it. Now, granted, more effort could be put into states like California, New York, Nevada. I mean, you expect more out of them. They need to do much better. But then again, we've been talking about this with boxing for years, and it hasn't actually happened. But there's always going to be rotten political appointments on athletic commissions and states that, you know, like Texas letting Margarito fight again or just having no athletic commissions at all. I mean, it's going to be tough.
Your thoughts on NXT?
Well, Jamie going is I was completely happy with that. Again, yeah, what you were saying about the Vicky thing. And again, they continued that on well again on SmackDown this week with, they finally had the Ziggler MVP match all over again, and Caitlyn ran down and was the one that tripped up Dolph Ziggler, or tripped up MVP doing the balling elbow and helped Dolph Ziggler get the win. And obviously that greatly upset Vicky, but it's actually been I don't know. They brought it up on SmackDown of, I think it was Michael Cole saying, what is she even doing here? She's on NXT trying to get a women's contract. I don't know, at this point, with the show being for the most part online at just anyway, there's about a million one things you can do. Just make these women, you know, Caitlyn, just get her off of there as part of the roster and then put something, or just concentrate on the other girls, I guess. Because really, her and Naomi on the main roster right now just wouldn't hurt my feelings. AJ, for that matter, either.
There's a rumor that AJ has gotten implants.
Well, you know what, and why would she not? Looking at everyone else that's ever joined WWE for the most part besides Stacy Keibler and, I mean, God, even Mae Young.
Yeah, I don't know if it's, I guess,
even though they were only for a night.
We'll find out on Tuesday, but we did get a report from the Florida Championship Wrestling tapings that her breasts looked noticeably larger. So, I guess,
would that mean she can't take any abuse in the ring? I would assume then would be a more of an off week for AJ this week, possibly.
Very
Things
well,
have to
could
be a little bit tender.
Very well, and then these. And what if she has to run the balance beam, and now she's off kilter?
Mike Sawyer, call in. I know you're listening in Las Vegas right now. Let us know how these things go as far as recovery time is.
Batista last night at the Strikeforce show talked about his future. There had been rumors online that he was done with fighting and he was going to head back to WWE. That was not the impression that Batista gave last night. He indicated that he really wanted to get into movies. He said that he was not averse to the idea of going back to WWE, but he was concentrating on film and acting right now and still training a lot for MMA, and noted that he's training stand-up, he's training submission grappling and jiu-jitsu on the ground, and he's feeling so much better than he was when he was actually taking bumps for WWE. So, again, another example of the real thing actually being easier on the body than the fake stuff. And he's very happy right now. So, no return to WWE, apparently, in the imminent future for Batista.
Yeah, and I mean, it hasn't been. I mean, I know in wrestling terms how fast everything moves now. It's been a long time since he's been in WWE. It hasn't been all that long. So, I mean, to try to, the rumors of him rushing back into WWE, I mean, the man has not spent all of his money yet, and I'm sure he's still going out there on acting gigs and relaxing and everything else. So, yeah, I think those rumors of always trying to get him back in there would just be something WWE would dream to happen, but are not actually going to happen. Although, again, his MMA career, I'm sure he's far better at defending himself now out in the street than he was before. But again, I just cannot fathom, unless it's a Bobby Lashley Batista freak show or a Herschel Walker Batista style of freak show, which really wouldn't be good for Batista. Well, either way, it wouldn't be good for Batista. I just cannot fathom him actually competing seriously in a professional MMA contest.
Let's go back to the phones. You're on Observer Radio. Who is this and where are you calling from?
How you doing? My name is John. I'm calling from Massapequa Park, Long Island, New York.
John, what's happening?
How you doing, buddy?
Not too bad.
Great. I have a two-part question, depending on how you answer the first part. If Bruno Sammartino refuses to be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame, can Vince still induct him?
Yes.
Okay, now, wouldn't it be beneficial for Vince, considering the lack of big names and attention to the Hall of Fame in the upcoming year, wouldn't it be beneficial for Vince to induct Bruno, which would make Vince look like the bigger person and get that name in, which is like so crucial to the Hall of Fame being taken seriously? Isn't it all good? Wouldn't it all be good for Vince in the long run?
Vince has been in a really friendly mood of late. He did the Bret Hart Appreciation Day at Madison Square Garden, and obviously they've had many problems over the years. He plugged Mick Foley's book, which is just outrageous when you think about it. Mick Foley.
Exactly.
And I think that, I don't think this year, because it's Atlanta, but I think that when WWE goes back to the New York market, and, you know, Vince is going to be another 3-4 years older than he is now. And I think there's a possibility that he may induct Bruno, whether Bruno shows up to accept it or not. I don't know for sure. You never know. I mean, things happen. And you know, he's 75. He's in great shape. We've had him on the show several times, and he's indicated he has no desire to be inducted or to show up and accept the award or anything like that. But you never know what kind of lines of dialogue might be open. He absolutely needs to be in that Hall of Fame. And
that's my main thing, is that the name Bruno Sammartino has to be in there. Now, would it be possible, being that Bruno said he would only accept being inducted into a WWF Hall of Fame, that Vince could open a WWF Hall of Fame, induct Bruno as the first inductee, and move all of the former WWF people who are in the WWE Hall of Fame over into that Hall of Fame? How's that as an idea?
I think that that's probably too much work. I mean, it's a decent idea, but I mean, I don't see them doing something like that. I mean, if anything, I just see Vince saying, okay, listen, WrestleMania is in Madison Square Garden for WrestleMania 30. I'm putting Bruno in the Hall of Fame. Bruno, you either show up and accept or you don't. One way or the other, I don't care, but I'm going to induct you. And I see that far more likely than negotiating some sort of a separate wing for WWF stars.
I hear you. And I absolutely love Bruno. He's my all-time favorite. But I believe that, look, you know, if Vince is going to be big enough with all the things that Bruno and him have gone through the years, you know, if Vince is big enough to have him in the Hall of Fame and Bruno still refuses, just go ahead and do it.
Yeah, I think that's most likely. I want to thank you very much for the call. Really appreciate it. And, Mike, is it going to happen someday?
I think after one or both men pass, I could see it happening. But, you know, again, unless it's a scenario where they, and even if they, you know, go back to New York for 30, you know, unless he's got a DVD planned or something like that, I mean, there's other people you could put in. I think even by that point, I know people always talk about the dwindling pool. Well, you know, they can really position to put anybody in that Hall of Fame, whether, like, region-wise they deserve it or not. I mean, we've talked about, like, maybe Jim Barnett going in because it's Atlanta this year. But that would be a, you know, I don't know. I just don't think Bruno's never going to show up for it because he doesn't care. And I think Vince is spiteful enough to Bruno where, I mean, yeah, he could put him in without actually having him there, but I don't think that happens until he really absolutely needs to, which I don't think will be anytime soon.
To one update on the health of Jim Ross, last time we talked to everybody, he was heading in for heart surgery. As it turned out, did not need surgery. They went in and checked him out through his femoral artery and determined he would not need surgery. He had some blockages, but otherwise was all right. 20% blockages in three areas. So he is fine, didn't need surgery, and they said his heart was in good shape. So that's very, very good news. Let's take one more quick call here. You're on Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, guys, it's Tommy from NorCal.
What's up?
Just a quick comment on the recent Figure Four format change. I love the new format of the newsletter, Brian. It's pretty cool.
Oh, thanks.
Okay, and just one quick question for both of you guys. Why isn't Sabu in the Observer Hall of Fame?
Well, because not enough people voted him in.
Now, would you say it would be old-timers being difficult towards his style?
I think the Hall of Fame issue had a breakdown of who got what votes. It might not have been for Sabu, but I just know that he never really gets much support at all.
No, not and only that. I mean, when you look at it, it gives top 10 breakdown. Well, or at least by historian, by active wrestlers, it breaks it down to the top 10 of who they voted for. And his name's not in there on any of them, I don't believe. So, I mean, it is just a matter of that. I know people will, for as revolutionary as he was, and I mean, people looked at him as like the wrestler of the year in the early 90s because he was doing so much innovative stuff.
Actually,
and
Mike, we have to do a break.
Tom Waltman and everything, but, you know,
yeah,
I just don't think, there's always 10 guys on there that I have a feeling are going to have a better opportunity than Sabu.
All right, we got to head to a break. We'll talk more about this when we come back. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the past 2 hours, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday. And, of course, for more news and information in pro wrestling and MMA, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. That's our website, daily news updates, radio shows, columns. We got tons of stuff. Check it out. There's tons of free content, and there's tons of content for members if you sign up, including more radio shows than you could ever possibly listen to, both brand new and archived, all up at WrestlingObserver.com. And in fact, in a moment, when the show goes off the air and the TNA Bound for Glory pay-per-view begins, Dave Meltzer is going to be doing live running play-by-play of the event on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com. So if you don't get the show, go up there and check it out. We'll give you the results of all the matches as they take place, talk about the big angles and all that sort of thing. And then later on this evening, yes, we are back exclusively on WrestlingObserver.com. Myself and Dave Meltzer, we'll be running down all of the news from the show. We'll be previewing the next week, a brand new one-hour radio show on the website for members. And if you are a member, make sure you check out this past Friday night's show with Mick Foley. 90 minutes with the hardcore legend talking the Bound for Glory pay-per-view. His book, Countdown to Lockdown, which is available, of course, on Amazon.com. Injuries, concussions, and a lot of other subjects. It was a great interview. We've got a lot of great feedback on that. So check that out at WrestlingObserver.com as well. That is going to do it for this week. Next week, lots of stuff coming up, including UFC 120, the Bisping-Akiyama show, which, Yes, I did in fact remember this time. That's coming up this Saturday night. And of course, next Sunday, we'll be back with a live show. If you're listening to this over the air radio and the show is ever preempted, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. We have a live streaming link on the front page of the website. So if you can't hear it where you're at on the radio, you can always hear it online live at WrestlingObserver.com with the archived shows showing up later on in the evening. So thanks as always, everybody, for listening. Been a fun time as always. Thanks, Mike, as always. We're going to be back next week with a brand new show. So you're listening to Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Radio Network. We'll talk to you again next week.